Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. Here is a short video from a TED talk that is given by Professor Megan Squire. She works at Elon University. This woman is also a doctor. She's got a PhD. So on paper, this woman is extremely clever. Personally, I'm not so sure, but anyway. Her big thing is, you could call her the censorship witch. Her goal is to shut us up, and to shut us up from saying what we want to say. This is because she believes that the concept of extremism is bad. However, often when these liberal fools think that extremism is bad, they also are quick to embrace communism. They have no problem with having communist friends. The only people that they really want to shut up are whites, and white males in particular. She has apparently done a lot of damage to the right wing. I've heard this from one of my friends in the USA. He himself was doxxed, and they had all kinds of data on him. And she is apparently the key person who's busy hunting through databases, etc., and trying to find details about the white right. She has access to Facebook's database. I don't know how easy it is to get that kind of access that she's got, whether just anybody can go and hunt through all sorts of messages. I don't know enough. I've never bothered writing an app for Facebook. But you never know. It might be that she's got the connections that allow her to go and do data mining there. She also talks about data mining Venmo. From what I can pick up from what she says, and also from the books that she's written two books on data mining that are sold on Amazon, and one of them deals with the language called Python. I have recently begun dabbling in Python a bit myself. It has certain uses for me. And this woman's books, both of them have got a rating of 2 out of 5 on Amazon. So it doesn't look as though her technical skills are impressing other people. Her system that she boasts about, called Whack-A-Mole, sounds to me like it's a hodgepodge of software that she's written to import data from various databases and to then massage it. Since I also have gathered data and written systems, I suspect that her Whack-A-Mole system is something that she's hacked together. And she's probably just storing all this information on a database. What is quite interesting in her presentation are her charts. I have told people on a number of occasions that I'm sure that intelligence agencies are busy keeping track of everybody that we have contact with, and that they're building up big organograms of who talks to whom, etc. Well, if you look at her charts, then she's actually busy doing that as well. She's actually drawing up an organogram, and she's got tons of data about us. I must say, I wish that I could get much better pictures of her organograms, because I think it would be very interesting to see what it tells us about ourselves. Here is the enemy, and she's using it. But I'd love to know more about what it tells us about ourselves. Who is where and who is reaching what audience? In one case, when she's speaking, she talks about some people passing on a message on Facebook, and then somebody changes the title and changes some of the text, and then they blast it off to a group that spreads to 1 million people. I was seriously impressed by that. I didn't know that there was anybody on our side who had access to somehow spreading to a group of 1 million people. And it seemed as if there might even be another group it was just as big. So I was pretty impressed by that. But her goal is to shut up what she calls online extremism. I never could quite understand what is this obsession with extremism. Why is it that these so-called liberals are focusing on extremists? And of course, extremist always, without fail, ends up being a white male. But when we get back to the topic of Professor Carol Quigley, I now understand what's going on. In a nutshell, these Jews claim to be positioning themselves politically in the center. In South Africa, that is how the liberal Jews position themselves. So they claim that they are between communists on the left and whites on the right. But the reality is that they are basically in bed with the communists. Basically. They're in bed with the communists, and the only real enemy that they are scared of is the white right. So it's a bogus position. But extremism is a particular topic that Professor Quigley spoke about, and it's one of many concepts to do with civilization that we need to get to. Because once you understand Quigley, then you'll understand why these supposed liberals are talking all the nonsense that they're talking. And they believe that they are doing good things for civilization. However, Quigley explained his logic as to what these things are, why he arrives at that conclusion. And that is a big, long story all by itself. But these idiots and fools, and she's a fool, these idiots and fools believe that they are doing good things. Now that I understand Quigley in detail, I tell you, I think I could easily debate these people, and one could actually beat them. But you need to understand deeper things of what it is that this is all about. She also mentions the four ideologies. She says there are these four ideologies that are clearly the problem. I'm assuming that the four ideologies are National Socialism, Nazism, Fascism, the South, the American South, the Confederates, and I'm guessing apartheid or colonialism. But it would be interesting to hear more on what she says. I don't think she's a great speaker, and it seems to be just a small section from a talk she gave, and probably the audience had to be forced to be there. They seem to be younger people and easily fooled. The crux of all these arguments, though, or one of the critical parts of their arguments, lies in the notion that you need other people other than whites. That is actually the crux of their argument. And when you understand Quigley and what Quigley was saying, you'll understand why these people believe that you need lots of non-whites around. And this helps to explain the extreme weakness of the United States. Everybody is weak at the knees when it comes to the blacks, and that is because of some of the concepts that came from Quigley. These fools and idiots believe in a soft form of civilization. However, that in and of itself is a fallacy, because civilization was created by strong white males. It was created by white men. You can go back to ancient Greece, you can go back to Rome. Modern democratic civilization is supposed to be based on Rome and Greece. But in Rome and Greece, women weren't in parliament, women weren't in the government, and it was actually a military force that created democracy. And it was nothing at all like what these liberals believe. The Romans didn't have women in government. They didn't allow it. These were military men who had democracy among themselves. These were strong people. And in the writings of Quigley, he also explains his view of civilization, and he too has this soft view of civilization. But it's all wrong. It's not what it was. That is not how it ever was. Civilization was created by strong men and maintained by strong men. You cannot take something like that and maintain it using weak, pathetic scum, because the system needs to be upheld through strength. And all these modern liberals, most likely under the influence of Jews, they believe in the notion that civilization is soft. It's not. And I think Christianity is also added to this notion. The reality is that when the white male stands up, and he now wants to stand up against the system, the fact of the matter is he is the owner of the system. And here are these women and faggots and Jews wanting to tell you, no, no, you can't do this, you can't do this. Reality is this was originally invented by the white male, and the white male's temperament and his thinking is correct. And these scum like her, they are protecting all the people who are actually breaking down civilization. The whole thing is such a mess. I cannot believe that anybody can take her nonsense seriously. But this woman has caused a lot of damage, and you can listen to her story of what she is up to. But I'm sure we've got a lot of cleverer people. We just don't have access to the money and the kind of data that she has access to. But even she seems to be limited in some ways. However, I have it on good authority from a well-connected American friend of mine that she's caused a lot of damage to the right wing. So anyway, listen to her story. And I wish that we could get some of those organograms and look at them more closely. To me, I think that it shows how much we've progressed and how big the movement really is. And if she thinks that they're going to stop us, they have no idea what's coming, these fools and idiots. As for her, she wouldn't be using computers nor be in a civilized country if it wasn't for the actions of the white males. Women like her are absolutely treasonous to their own race, if not their own nation. It disgusts me.
How can we use data science to understand how hate groups organize online? Data science is the process of cleaning, storing, and organizing data so that we can use computer models and statistics to understand problems and pose solutions, ask questions. Some of the questions that I'm most interested in this space have to do with online radicalization, online propaganda and hatred and how it flows through social media, and the makeup of groups and hate groups that use these systems. One of the earliest questions that I asked in this space was about group membership crossover. I wondered, if you join a hate group online, do you just kind of stay with that, or do you ever dabble? Do you ever change ideologies? To answer this question, I started looking at an event you might be familiar with, the Unite the Right event in Charlottesville, Virginia, back in 2017. So this event was organized on Facebook, which at the time made it very easy to collect data about. So what I did was write some software that asked Facebook for all of the people who had RSVP'd going or maybe to this event. And then I wrote some more software to construct a list of 2,000 hate groups that were actively using Facebook at that time to organize. And then I asked Facebook for the membership rosters for all of those groups as well. I threw everything into a database and then constructed a social network based on the shared memberships across all of those groups. This is a picture of what that social network looks like, some of the ideologies that were involved in those hate groups on Facebook. Each circle on the diagram is a group. The groups are, the circles are larger, rather, if they have more members in the group. And they're connected with a line if the groups share members in common. Groups are drawn towards the center of the diagram the more other groups they share with. And the ones out on the fringe, out on the periphery, are kind of not sharing with very many other groups at all. So my question to you is, can you tell just from this diagram, or can you guess where the Unite the Right event might be? If you guess the center, you are exactly correct. It was one of the most centrally located, one of the most ideologically diverse and pulling together other groups in the entire Facebook hate ecosystem at this time. In fact, if we hover over the circle, we sort of blow it up. This is called an ego graph. We can see just which other kinds of groups this event was pulling from. It's basically every other ideology we had there, and in good numbers. This is a photograph my husband took in Charlottesville that day on the ground. And data, photographs are data as well. One of the things I really love about this picture is that you can see the same four ideologies that I just showed you in the network graph, but here they are live and in person. And they're represented by the flags the men are carrying and the outfits that they're wearing. This event truly did catalyze multiple ideologies and multiple groups to come together for one day. Another question that I asked about online hate is how the groups themselves are organized. I was curious about leadership and membership, and if we could use data science to expose some of those facts. I turned to a different social network, though, to answer these questions. I looked at a network called Venmo. This is a payment network where people pay one another for services. You can see in this screenshot that two members are paying one another for monthly dues. This is a hate group that's using Venmo quite regularly. Good news for me is all of the data on Venmo is publicly available. So it's easy, once again, to collect and make a nice data set. I wrote a computer program to collect 200 different hate group members that were using this platform to pay their monthly dues to an organization, and then constructed another network to see if I could discern the leaders of the groups automatically. This is a picture of that network, and in this case, each circle is a member of the hate group. And this time they're connected with lines if they paid a transaction to one another. So they paid each other for dues or t-shirts or stuff like that. The more transactions they had, the larger the circle. And then I colorized them red if my computer model indicated that those people might be good candidates for being leaders. The question I had, though, was how do I tell if my model was right? How do I know if those actually were the leaders? So as it turns out, this particular hate group has bylaws, and they put these bylaws online. And they blacked out the names of the national leaders in the document. But unfortunately for them, they did a poor job of this, so anyone could just hover over with their mouse and reveal the names of the eight national leaders there. Yeah, so I, of course, did that. And now I have a list of the eight leaders right nationwide. And then I have my predicted leaders, so I can now compare and see if my model was correct. And right off the bat, we see that four of the leaders that I predicted were in the bylaws document, so that's pretty interesting. Another three of the leaders that I predicted were not in the national organization as leaders, but they did end up being cell leaders, individual cells. Another two of the members that I predicted to be leaders, I was unable to confirm because they used a fake name on Venmo, so I don't know who they are. And then my model got one totally wrong. I never would have predicted that this person down at the bottom here would have been a nationwide leader, and yet he was one of those named. What we learned from this is that we can use just the data that these guys exposed on social media to reconstruct a leadership map and a hierarchy of the membership within this group to some effect. The last example I'm going to share with you today is about tracking online propaganda and hate as it flows through social media. I became interested in this last year after the Christchurch massacre in New Zealand, when the killer created a manifesto of his beliefs and posted it online and then live-streamed his killings. Social media companies were frantic. They were trying to remove this content from the internet, and I wrote a technical article about why that was difficult to do. And my editor at the time asked me, hey, do you have one of those lines and boxes diagrams? And I said, oh man, that's a great idea, but I don't have one. So I thought about it for a long time, and what would that even look like? About 6 months later, unfortunately, another killer was inspired by the first one. This time it was in Germany. And he also live-streamed his killings and released a manifesto online. That morning, I dashed together a diagram. It looks like this, and I put it up on Twitter. And just really quick, I'm not super happy with how it looks at all, but I was trying to convey how two copies of the video, or two versions of the video, had moved through a social media platform called Telegram through their channels. I don't like this diagram, and I can think about 100 things wrong with it or things that I'd fix about it. And about 2 weeks later, I was given another chance. Thankfully, not another killing, but this time it was an online harassment campaign, a hate campaign. And so what I'm going to show you next is sort of a work in progress of how I'm attempting to diagram how this hate campaign and how that harassment flowed through social media. It started on a Facebook page where someone had put up a post that was directing hate at a particular individual, targeting them for harassment. The post was picked up by a handful of other similar Facebook pages. Each of these had about 2,000 likes, so kind of a slow start. But one of the pages, one of those posts, caught the attention of another Facebook administrator, and this one had a much larger audience, about 500,000 followers. He changed the headline a little bit, added some more hateful special sauce, and reposted the harassment campaign. And this time, phase two of the campaign looked something like this. It really started to catch fire. Some of those large circles that you see in the center of the diagram, those are pages with 1 million, 2 million, one of them had 2.5 million followers. So this campaign really started to take off at this point, and the hate was very intense. The campaign eventually died down. There was a third phase to it, but it didn't really catch much attention. And my question at this point was, how did this happen? What was the catalyst? What was the fuel that made people direct so much hate and so much harassment at this target? How did this work? So I ran the numbers on the reactions that people had to the Facebook post. I collected the data, and then I did some math, and I figured out that over 80%, upwards of 85, sometimes 90% of the reactions that people had that they were targeting at this person were the angry emoji. They were just so mad. There's a lot of things that I don't like about this diagram, too. I'm not entirely done with it. I'm not super pleased. One thing that I haven't been able to convey at all, I just don't know how to do it yet, is how to show the harassment campaign moving into other platforms. So this campaign moved onto Twitter, and it moved onto Telegram. I don't know how to add all of that to this picture. It also moved into the real world, to the person's email and to their phone. How do I visualize all those messages and calls? How do I visualize threats to the person's home and to their workplace? What does that look like on a picture? I just don't know. I've worked on it for a really long time, but I must tell you, this is not my favorite diagram to work on at all, because in case you didn't guess by now, the target of that campaign was me. So not a lot of love lost between me and this diagram, but I'm still working on it. It's okay, though. It's one of those lemons and lemonade things where being the target of an online harassment campaign like that is just one more opportunity to use data science to understand online hate and how it works, so that one day we'll finally know enough that we'll be able to come up with a solution and fix it. Thank you.
These are my websites, historyreview.com, africancrisis.info, and white-shop.biz. This is my attempt to try and do some Jew-free trading and experimenting with the next level of stuff. So, thank you very much for listening. We'll be chatting again soon. Take care of yourselves.